You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by the two Chrises, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely. Nicole Hale is out on assignment with family.
What?
I don't know. She's enjoying that.
And for the latest news on Nicole's family, we
she's enjoying time with her family.
I would have believed it if you would have said that she'd gone due to the Easter apocalypse or
something
like
that. Easter,
I would believe that more than what
the Easter apocalypse.
The Easter apocalypse.
I don't think that's a thing. We don't know.
No. No. God. Anyway.
Come on.
So,
you know, like those eggs, you know, they come back to life. You know?
Yeah.
The zombie apocalypse.
So it is Fanboy versus at least mediocrity for me. As I had a very light and odd week. You know, I'm used to having some of these issues that would come that came out for me this week, like, mixed in with other things. And they just weren't. And so, I don't know. I don't know about you guys. It's kind of an odd week.
You're just not reading anything interesting.
That's got to be it, you know?
Yeah.
That's got to be it. But there is some other stuff the guys are going to talk about. I know Young Avengers is out. Was out this week, and some other things, so we will have
Uncanny Avengers comes out. You usually like to talk about it.
Did I miss it? I must have missed it. I could have see, that's what it is. I knew I was missing something. Okay, well, I'll have to get that next week. Thankfully I'm the only person reading that ever, so I love that book. I don't know why, it's so cheesy to me, and that's probably why I love it. Because I'm taking it as complete just ham, and it's kind of fun that way. So we have Chris McFeely back. He's going to explain to us what happened in Action Comics at the end of the show.
Don't build it up.
Because I tried to sort of say, and I don't know, I'm not even probably close, so I'm gonna let the man who is our resident expert talk about it at the end of the show. But in the meantime, there is news.
There is news. Nothing major, though.
No. Nobody quit this week. Nobody walked out this week.
Well, not yet. But Sunday's not over yet. No. WonderCon is on, but there haven't even been any real big announcements that I've noticed out of that. You know, we have one announcement from DC that I've seen that will excite you, JD, but it will mean you will have to buy a new comic.
Okay.
Which it has been confirmed out of WonderCon that there will be a 3-issue story kicking off in All-Star Western soon. Booster Gold?
Yeah! In Western?
Yeah.
Yes! That sounds awesome!
Yeah. Is he teaming up with Jonah Hex? Is that what it is?
I would presume so. It's Jonah Hex's comic.
That sounds awesome.
So that's cool, actually. That's a fun bit of news. That's literally all we know. But
hey, man, I will take it. Booster Gold, whatever, man. Whatever. When does that start?
I don't know if we have. Hang on, let me just check that. Number 19. Next month's All-Star Western.
Oh, wow. Sweet. Okay. Well, I got to make sure I get that on my poll then. I don't want to miss that. I mean, I know those issues just fly off the shelves.
Leave All-Star Western. Hey. It's not been canceled.
This is true. That book has managed to not piss anybody off enough to be canceled.
I've heard nothing but good things about All-Star Western.
No, I'm sure it's a great book. And like I said, they're adding, you know, Booster Gold for a couple issues. That's even better. So
plus, that's about it from DC. I honestly haven't heard anything else really out of them. Just random news bites about things that are coming up. That's nothing too surprising, really. Marvel hasn't really had anything major either. I mean, they've announced a couple of creative team changes as well. Which is that Daniel Way is going to be leaving Thunderbolts at the end of his first year.
No way?
Way?
No. Yes way.
Then he's gone and it'll be no way.
Tubular.
Okay. Sorry, I couldn't.
No way is good way. Charles Sewell, who's the current writer of Swamp Thing, will be taking over Thunderbolts after that.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And meanwhile, it's also been announced that Jeff Loeb is going to be handing Nova over to Zeb Wells after the first story arc.
Yay! I mean, what? Okay.
So these are both really good things, because Daniel Way sucks, and Jeff Loeb is Jeff Loeb. So, you know, these are both steps in the right direction.
Zeb Wells is not bad. He was one of the
Zeb Wells
Spud
is
guys.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
I like Zeb Wells. Yeah, now, Ed McGuinness is leaving the book, unfortunately, along with Loeb, but Paco Medina is coming on for the art. And
oh, that's good. Fine. Yeah.
That's just good, you know. Yeah. I mean, of course, now it has set the DC defensives off, going, oh, they all rip on DC for its changing creative teams, and when Marvel does the same thing, it's all just... Not. And I'm like... I think if you check, you'll see that writers leaving books of their own accord in publicly announced changeovers between creative teams are a little different than people walking off books before the first issues of them even come out because they hate editorial.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and especially when it's like Loeb's like, yeah, I'm just doing the first arc and then I'm going to go. Because it's not like the dude's not busy. He's got a little bit going on.
That's all anybody should have expected out of
him. Yeah. So that's not surprising at all.
Daniel Way says that he's received an offer for something that he's been wanting to do for a long time that he couldn't say no to, which is why he's leaving Thunderbolts.
Well, that's even more interesting, really.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see what
I won't
he's...
read it, but...
No. He's going to be on... he'll be on Green Lantern Corps. That's where he's going.
Oh, God. Oh!
You know, I don't
you never know.
I've never even read anything from Daniel Way. I mean, what does he do? What has he done in the past? It's so bad.
Wolverine Origins.
Okay.
Deadpool. Yeah.
Okay.
Yo, yeah. That's all. He did all the Deadpool
Punisher.
Stuff. Yeah.
Did he do the Angel Punisher?
No,
Angel?
That was not him.
That was not him. Okay, all right. Right. I don't
remember what Punisher he's done exactly. I'm sure he's done some Punisher. He definitely did a Punisher versus Bullseye. He's very decompressed, thudding along sort of storytelling. Wolverine Origins was his primarily, and he's been writing Deadpool since the whole of the last Deadpool series. Was his
that's all his stuff. All the
multiple
secret
voices.
Invasion
it makes
stuff.
Sense why I've never read anything by.
Yeah.
There you go. You see. Yeah, what else?
I don't know. I like that Secret Invasion Deadpool arc, but I know after that it really started to go off the rails, so...
I just hated it. To be honest, like, he reintroduced Deadpool and Wolverine Origins first, then he made up this multiple voices in the head talking through the caption box thing that I just hated out of the gate, you know. So, yeah. Let's see. The other announcement out of Marvel is... it's an unusual one.
Uh-oh.
But, it's for a new series.
Oh, okay.
It's an odd one. Now, this is off the... No, calm down.
G-Hulk? Damn it.
God, man. It's either that or freaking Dan Ketch, man. You just gotta, like, let it go, dude. Just let it go. You want a She-Hulk Dan Ketch comic. That's what you wanted.
Marvel 2, Marvel Team Up.
Yeah.
She-Hulk and Dan Ketch. Yeah, I'd buy that.
Yeah.
Gail Simone can write it. It'd be awesome.
It's your dream book, isn't it?
It would be, honestly.
Okay, well, this series is not that.
I'm shocked.
It is a new series that spins out of the end of Age of Ultron. Don't know what's going on there, but that's as much as we know. It's going to be written by Sam Humphries with art by Andre Araujo. And it is entitled Avengers AI. One immediately sucks one's teeth at the news of yet another Avengers book to be added to the thing. But this is about a team gathered together by Hank Pym. Obviously, this is the involvement in the end of Age of Ultron, whatever it is, led by the Vision, including Victor Mancha from Runaways, that's the son of Ultron, a mysterious character called Alexis, Monica Chang, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and a Doombot on the road to redemption.
Wow. Huh.
Okay.
Ha is the reaction I have, because that does not not sound like something I wouldn't be interested in reading, but the creative team doesn't excite me in any way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. First off, like, the who the what is, and then, wow, that, I mean, that's a weird cast.
Yeah, but Vision.
Yeah, but...
And Victor Mancha. And a Doombot.
And a Doombot? That's the weirdest thing ever. Like, hi, I'm a what? Doombot. You mean
why
you're
is
a not Doom?
Not called Machine Men? Like, you know, men, like X-Men, yeah. Machine
obviously
Men.
Obviously, putting Machine Man on the team was obviously too sensible for them.
Wow.
Where are X-51 and Jocasta in this year?
To me, my Machine Men.
I just really want this Doombot to go through. Well, either I just want it to talk like Dr. Doom all the time, or for it to just be able to say, Doom's word is law! It will be all it will say. It'll like Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy, something like that. None escapes Doom! The will of Doom is all. And it will just
yeah.
be like, having breakfast, because it's an Avengers book and everybody sits around and has breakfast, and it's just like...
It yeah, but it's not Bendis, so...
Yeah. Pass the pancakes, but it's like, Doom's word is law, is all it says.
Yeah. yeah, great. Butter? Can I have the butter? I just need that. You know what? Never mind. Just never mind.
I just thought of something news-wise, and I don't know if you heard about this or not. It's not really... I don't know if it's huge news or not, but you know, the whole Angela thing, did you hear about that?
Oh, God, that's right. How could I possibly overlook? Jesus Christ, on a bike! What the hell? I just forgot because I wasn't here last week. I couldn't remember what we talked about last week.
We talked about it last week. Holy shit,
how could we not talk about this? Oh, my God. Okay.
What?
You don't even know. You don't know.
What?
He probably doesn't, but yeah.
Okay, right. So Marvel released a spoiler, and they call it a spoiler, about the end of Age of Ultron.
Uh-huh.
They're insisting that this is not the super secret ending that they've talked about, how only 8 people know it, and how Joe Quesada is coming out of drawing retirement to draw it so that only 8 people will know the super secret ending to Age of Ultron. But it has been confirmed that the final issue of Age of Ultron is going to feature an appearance by Angela from Spawn.
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
What?
Okay, there's this whole deal. With
yeah, it's kind of complicated.
It's really complicated. You can go ahead and tell it.
Yeah, because I... What?
Early on in Spawn's life, Todd McFarlane got major creators, Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, Dave Sim, to do an issue of Spawn. And in the issue that Neil Gaiman did, he co-created with McFarlane the character of the warrior angel Angela, who was a regular supporting character in Spawn's cast for years after that. But it did turn into a legal battle between McFarlane and Gaiman over who actually owned the character. Well, they settled that, and it's been confirmed at this stage that either party can do what they want with her as long as they get approval from the other one. And Neil Gaiman's coming back to Marvel, and he's bringing Angela with him.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so crazy. What
so
the hell?
Crazy.
The 90s are back, and they want revenge, and it's in your Marvel comic.
You thought DC was bringing back the 90s.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's got to be the strangest news story I think I've read in, like, a long time.
What?
We've also heard that Gaiman is coming back to Marvel because he's got other stuff going on. He's going to be co-writing. Angela's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy after this, and Gaiman is going to be co-writing part of that with Bendis. Of course, the Iraqi reaction a lot of people have, of course, is you hear that Gaiman, you start thinking about Miracle Man again.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people thought that whenever they started talking about a character making their introduction to the Marvel Universe in the solicits for the finale of Age of Ultron, a lot of people thought they were talking about Marvel Man, Miracle Man.
Yeah.
With Gaiman coming back again.
When they were teasing it, that's what I thought. I was like, God. Yeah.
Well, because hasn't Marvel been sitting on the rights to that for like a couple years now?
Yes, they have.
So, yeah.
Coming back, you never know.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so that's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
That's...
Didn't realize, I forgot about that, because I just assumed that it was at the very start of the week, yeah.
Yeah, it was like last week sometime, but like I didn't think about it last week, but when we started talking about Age of Ultron, I was like, hey, we didn't talk about
it. Wow.
That is batshit crazy.
That's insane.
There's no rationalizing it. I can't. That's just, got to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like, we've got a character, here you go. I mean, that's almost as crazy as, like, them pulling Circuit Breaker out of the woodwork, you know.
Far less crazy.
Okay, it's far less crazy, but it's almost...
No, Angela is far more crazier than that, because Marvel owns Circuit
Breaker. Right, and that's... Right.
It would be surprising, but you would go, oh, that's nice.
Right.
A Spawn character is moving to the Marvel Universe. That is not... Oh, that's it,
I mean, it makes sense when you think about it, but still, it's kind of like, why? What?
Okay, we need to get her in that Guardians of the Galaxy movie now, just to piss off Todd McFarlane. All
right. Totally. And then she's like, gonna.
See?
And then she's
we
gonna
can have Angela in our movie instead of your Spawn movie. See?
Yeah.
Take that.
And
then
have her fight Death's Head. That would be.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I'm holding on to that. I'm really thinking Death Set is going to be in the movie.
That would be awesome.
It's odd. But one has to hope that that is not the big super surprising ending of Age of Ultron that they've been warning us about.
That Death Set is in it?
No, that Angela is in it.
Oh. Well, no. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, if they're saying there's something else, then...
Well, yeah, big deal, but it's like whatever the big super surprise is just going to be spoiled the Monday before the comic comes out in the New York Times anyway.
Well, yeah, that's true. Hank Pym's going to die. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I think a lot of people are expecting that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
To unhappen, because, I mean, we are at a point with Age of Ultron where obviously whatever is going on will have to be unhappened. You know,
mm-hmm.
This is, you know, Black Widow murders somebody for Twix in the second issue. This is not sticking around.
Yeah. Well, I mean... Yeah,
time travel will be involved.
Yeah. Yeah. It would certainly give a better explanation as to why Avengers Academy was canceled.
Retroactively, yeah.
Well, I mean, but they would have known that they would have been in the planning stages for this when they canceled Academy. No? You're not buying that? Okay.
No. I don't
Fine.
Know that by that anything anywhere has any kind of
Fine,
connection
then.
To this.
Okay. All right, then. All right.
Yeah. Okay, there's one other bit of news,
okay.
Which was actually from last week.
That
you
I
guys
missed?
Didn't mention it because you are our godless heathens.
What? Yeah.
You are horrible people.
I was really trying to skip through. That was
you
the most news.
You obviously have not read this. But anyway, so now last week this happened. Last Tuesday, to be precise. Nearly 2 weeks ago at this stage. On the Monday, some teaser images were released for a new project by Brian K. Vaughan, who we all know as the writer of Saga, Runaways, Ex Machina, Why the Last Man, and Marcos Martin, Spider-Man and Daredevil artist. And,
wait, I have heard of this.
No sooner had the teaser images been released on Monday that the project itself appeared suddenly on Tuesday. And it is a digital-first comic, which is set to run 10 issues, and it is entitled The Private Eye. It is 32 pages, optimized for reading on digital formats in that it's all 32 of the pages are in widescreen format, or landscape format, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So you can read them on your laptop or your desktop without any pesky scrolling or anything, and of course you can read them sideways on your tablet as well. The big thing about this is quite revolutionary as far as digital comics go, because Digital Music did this a while ago and it set the tone. You name your price.
Ah.
Ooh.
This is not sold through Comixology or any other app. This is something you download directly from the site set up to sell it, which is panelsyndicate.com. Put that in the show notes. Everybody go to it. All the money goes straight to Vaughan and Martin. Download. You download it to keep and have. No DRM, no in the cloud or anything. It's available in English, Spanish, and Catalan. You can get it in PDF, CBR, or CBZ, and you name your price. You pay whatever you like. They recommend 99 cents. I was all over it. It is great, and I will give them $3 or more for each subsequent issue that comes out.
Mm.
We're not going to review it, but I'll tell you, you guys, I'm ashamed of both of you.
I heard about this, but like I didn't quite understand it, so that's why I didn't go get it, and I didn't talk about it. I was like, I'll just wait until I hear from you guys if it's all right. Because you guys will tell me if it's all right.
The gist of it is that it is a story set in the near future, America's tricentennial. So I say the near future, a little over 50, 60 years in the future, 2076. It's a future noir world where internet usage ceased decades beforehand after the cloud burst and all the information everyone had ever kept secret on the internet was compromised.
Mm.
So internet usage has ceased, and it's the adventure of a private eye cum paparazzo who gets the dirt on people now that it's an entirely analog world again.
Hmm.
Who finds himself, he's recruited by somebody to she wants him to find dirt on herself. She needs to know that she's hidden it so well that nobody will be able to dig it up.
Wow.
So that she can get her. Yeah, but then murder.
Dun, dun, dun.
and it goes from there. You know, it's a really fascinating future noir. It's the future. So there's, electromag trains and everything running through it. And it never really occurs to me as I'm reading this, that this guy's taking photos on an analog Polaroid camera with a big flash bulb because it's such the classic paparazzo image. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, and you find out in the course of the story that this is what happened, that the internet, the cloud burst, as they said. The internet was compromised, and every secrets for a very short period of time, everyone's secrets everywhere in the world was laid bare for anyone and everyone to see. He's got a crazy old grandfather who complains about how he can get no bars on his cell phone and all the rest of it. He's like, Grandpa, I don't know what that thing is.
God.
I love that it's like, the story is like no internet, yet you can only get it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great.
There's a nice bit of irony there. Yeah,
that was Marcos Martin's suggestion. Like they were working on the project, and Martin suggested, "What if we only release it through the internet?" Yeah, and it's supposed to be about 10 issues long, and panelsyndicate.com. Spelled the way you would imagine. So 32 pages altogether, which is including the cover. Credits and dedication, so it's 29 widescreen story pages for whatever price you want to pay. And of course, I mean, it's Marcos Martin, so it's gorgeous to look at as well. Just a great visual of the private eye himself, who wears this like white hoodie. So when he flips the hood up, it's urban camouflage. So he flips the hood up and he disappears from view. But printed on the back of the hood is this grinning Cheshire Cat face. So the last thing anybody chasing him sees before he fades away completely is this grinning mocking smile.
Nice.
Yeah. So panelsyndicate.com.
Okay.
Go and get it for Christ's sakes. If you haven't already.
I will have to check that out.
Yes, you will.
Because I have electronic devices with which to read things.
And you say you have nothing good this week.
Yeah, there you go.
I could have had that if you would have told me last week. See, you can't miss the show anymore.
I tweeted the shit out of that. Repeatedly.
Hey, I went internet.
Yeah, but did you send me an email?
I went internet dark because I've been playing BioShock Infinite and I do not want
to. Ooh, I've heard there's a really cool ending
to
that.
Shut the hell up!
I don't know anything about.
Shut up!
I don't. Did I say anything? Saying is I heard that there's a cool ending. That's all I've heard. I don't know anything about it.
It's a cool game.
So.
You should get it for your PC. I can't get it on my PC. My PC sucks.
Ooh, I should get it for my PC. Well, I have a PS3, too.
They say the console versions are, they're fine, but man, they say the PC's gorgeous if you got a PC that can really, run it.
I probably do. I might have to do that. I wonder, is it available on Steam?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely.
I might have to do that. All right, anyway, video game stuff. So, comic books then, news, that's it. We're good.
That's the one.
No one else walked out this week, so we're okay.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I say.
It could still happen.
It's not over. Something, yeah.
Worry about that DC Comics. I mean, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. It's still a mess, man. Still a mess. All right, Chris Triplett, what do you got, sir?
I am going to recommend a Fantastic Four comic this week, which is not a surprise. That's not a surprise because we like Fantastic. The surprise is it's a Fantastic Four Age of Ultron comic. I enjoyed this issue better than the actual Age of Ultron comic that came out this week, to tell you the truth.
That's probably not hard. High five!
About it. I mean, seriously, it's like, what's going on in Age of Ultron? There's not, like, nothing really going on. And I was not going to get this. Like, I saw these, because they pulled them, because, like, they pulled me Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah. That's the trick. That's what they're trying to make happen. They're trying to trick everybody.
And it's like, it's number 5, so it's like, it's always
AU.
Like the, AU. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to get this. I don't want to get this. And then, like, I saw that Matt Fraction wrote it. I was like,
that's why I got it. A couple of years ago, this would have been, a couple of years ago, this would have been Age of Ultron, Fantastic Four, number 1 of 3. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
But, say, 1 or 2 years ago, this would have been Fantastic Four, Age of Ultron, one shot. Now, they can't even do that. They actually, there's no other way to describe it. This is a trick. This is an attempt to trick people into buying what they are presenting as another issue of the ongoing series by using the same number.
It's really dirty. I mean, it's shame on Marvel.
This one is actually not so bad because it is written by Fraction. So, which is it, we're not talking about it, but Spider-Man came out this week, and I got it because it's written by Christos Gage.
Yeah, that's the same way I was. I was like, I wouldn't get it.
I was like, I'm not going to get it, but, oh, Christos Gage, okay. It's a fine comic, yeah. It's not able to really do anything. It is more of a patch to say, no, God, we swear that's absolutely Otto in the main Age of Ultron series, even though it is clearly not, because Bendis wrote it before that happened, that it's Peter. But it's a fine little comic that's not really able to do anything. It's hamstrung by its nature, but it's a fine little set of 22 pages.
Spidey is too funny in Age of Ultron, even with all the shit going. There's no goddamn way that's Otto. <There's no
laughs> I mean, if we just take a moment with Age of Ultron number 3, like, so nothing happens.
Yeah.
And She-Hulk and Luke Cage then stage a thing. After finding out from Spidey that Ultron is apparently buying super beings. Back of first issue, Luke and She-Hulk stage a thing where Luke goes to give She-Hulk to Ultron. And I don't give a fuck. Okay, so the end of the issue comes along and Luke looks up at the figure that's welcoming and goes, it's not Ultron! And you turn the page and I don't give a fuck, I'm spoiling it. It's Vision.
Yeah.
So you go, oh, well, hang on now. Oh, this...
That's the only interesting thing.
I do not care if I am spoiling Age of Ultron. No. It is not worth spoiling. I will buy all 10 issues. I am a mug. So basically, the first 3 issues are what the first issue of Age of Ultron should have been, first of all. But besides that, anyway, you get to the end of this, and the first thought I genuinely had was, oh, okay, feels like this has really started now. Feels like we're really underway here. Okay. So then I read Superior Spider-Man, number 6 AU, in which it is confirmed in no uncertain terms that even though they do not show the Vision, so as to preserve, obviously, the surprise for anybody who hasn't read Age of Ultron, it is said in no uncertain terms that, no, Ultron's just controlling him remotely. Oh, well, I guess that's the excitement and interest sucked out of that notion.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Watch out there, Age of Ultron. You almost did something interesting.
I don't know. That might be like crossover stuff. You know, it might not be that might not exactly be what Bendis is going to do with it. Because, like you said, they can't spoil it.
Hey,
so,
he wrote this thing like 3 years ago. I'm pretty sure all the tie-in writers know what.
Yeah, there's not like
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. Like you said, I'm going to keep getting it too. Because I mean, why not? I mean, seriously,
we're
why
suckers.
Not?
We're suckers.
But like. Yeah, but like the reason
if something happens, we'll just go. On the other hand, fear itself, and look where we are now with that.
Yeah.
Everybody remember how at the end of Fear Itself, Captain America's shield wound up with a scar in it that he didn't want to buff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd that go?
Because I didn't remember that until I happened to see a picture of it there last week, and I was like. Yeah, I don't think anybody's bothered their whole drawing that scar on there in the last 2 years.
Mm-mm.
See, I like to think that anyway. The shield, like, it healed itself or something, you know?
I still wonder why it has the shield, and then I remember that it was just broken in the cartoon, and that wasn't comic.
I was going to say, like, when you were saying, I wonder why he still has the shield, and I was going to say, because the energy shield was too badass. That's why he still has the shield, because that energy shield was badass.
But his shield's broken in Age of Ultron as well.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, when that first happened in Secret Wars, like, that was shit your trousers terrifying. Like, that was, oh my god, what has happened? Captain America's shield is broken. Every bloody buddy does it now. No, the serpent lifted Captain America's shield and snapped it in two. Big deal. What? No. Okay, anyway, so this comic is happening.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
You know what you were saying?
Sidelighting like, there.
What you're saying is more interesting than what I'm probably going to say. I liked the comic, and it's not because it's, you know, an Age of Ultron crossover. I mean, that stuff happens, but it's like the little things that's in it. I mean, like, I'm trying to, like, figure out, you know, how does all this go together? Because we talked about it. It's like, you know, Age of Ultron in the universe of Marvel Comics. I don't get it.
It doesn't fit. I mean, you're thinking way too hard already at this point. I mean,
it's going to be unhappened. That's just what you have to assume from the outset. The idea is this has happened. It is being presented. It's not being presented as a parallel. It's Age of Apocalypse. Something happened. The world has changed, and it will be unhappened at the end of it. It's hard to buy when Age of Apocalypse canceled all the X-Men titles and replaced them with tie-in miniseries.
Yeah.
And the Marvel Universe is not doing that for Age of Ultron, so it doesn't sell it as a concept of relevance or importance or permanence or realness. But I've been saying that about Age of Ultron since it took so long to come out, and it became apparent that it could just be, as a story, picked up and moved to anywhere the timeline required it to be.
Well, I think my issue was that, like, I read both Superior Spider-Man AU and Fantastic Four AU, and Superior, it's like, boom, you're, like, right in the middle of Age of Ultron stuff going down and everything. But Fantastic Four, it plays out like it's the next issue of Fantastic Four. I mean, you can easily bet, like, somebody reading number four, and then maybe you skip to the next issue, and then you got AU, and you would think, oh, this is the next issue. They're in outer space. They get this call that, you know, crap's going down on Earth and that they need help. So they're, you know, leaving the kids behind and they're going back to Earth and they're going to, you know, try to help them. And I think that's the thing. It was like how this kind of fits a little bit more, but like what's going to happen like in the next couple issues of Fantastic Four, you know? But like
it's
this
going
one's
to go
interesting.
Right back to normal. That's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to happen.
Especially after what happens in the issue and everything, because basically the issue is about. They're leaving the kids because it's, you know, too dangerous for them to go back with them. But before they left, it's like they've recorded these messages, these things where they're telling them that, you know, if we don't come back.
Da, da, da.
Yeah, yeah. This,
da,
this,
da,
is...
da, da.
Exactly. You know what you're doing.
I don't know. It sounds like
music. Don't know what that is.
It's not sex.
It's violin music, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, kind of. Imagine the sad violin music.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're like,
this is...
Have you ever seen like the Ken Burns Civil War where it's like my dearest love?
Oh my gracious.
If I do not return from this terrible war, know that I will always love you.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
But like what's interesting about what really grabbed me is like I'm reading it, I was like, okay, you know, this is gonna be, you know, there's nothing really going on here. Then you get to Ben's story. You read
this? Yeah, this is where it starts to feel like action is setting something up for the future.
Yeah, I mean like it actually felt like, man, I was supposed to read this. This isn't just time.
Yeah.
Cause like so Ben like, you know, recorded a message and he's talking to him. It's kind of going back and forth, showing them battle the Ultrons on Earth, and it's like literally the final stand. Like, you know, they're not going to survive. You know, they're all going down.
Spoilers. This is the story of how Ben, Reed, and Johnny die in the Age of Ultron timeline.
Oh yeah. Wow!
And so like Ben is like leaving.
Well, this will be undone.
And he's, you know, telling them about how they got to go back and they got to do all this stuff and they got to help these people. And then, like, he kind of breaks down and he says, I ain't never told nobody this. I think maybe Dr. Doom is all my fault. And then Ben says, me and your dad were kids, and we were at the school. The guy was a rich jerk. I messed with this experiment he had in the room there, and I didn't mean to. I mean, I don't know if I did, but I ain't never told no one that before. And I was like, holy shit!
Oh, damn!
Damn, indeed, yeah.
Ultron crossover. I almost didn't buy this book, and I would have hated myself.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, and I'm like, what? And even like he fights an Ultron drone that's dressed like Doom
for no reason. It's like it just put Doom's cape and mask on after it killed him just for shits and giggles.
Wow.
You're like trophy or something. He's like, you were expecting someone else. He says, Doom fell. They all fell. You know, and then Ben has his big final fight. And then it's like, Reed's message is so sad. He's like talking like, I can't talk. You know, I don't have the words to explain. So he literally writes his message down. He can't really say goodbye to his kids. You know, and it's just like basically if you want to read a comic, it's just gonna make you sad and everything. You know, this is it. But man, that stuff with Ben. I was like, holy cow, I want to see them follow up on that. I want them to come back to that.
So all four of them died, or who died?
Sue's the only one that doesn't die, because Sue's knocking around in the main Age of Ultron story.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Future solicits suggest that it's her and Wolverine that are going to do the going back in time to kill Hank Pymishness of the story.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, they
like this. Sorry,
I was going to say, the way Reed dies is, like, crazy, because he wraps himself around all these Ultrons, and he tells Sue to run, and they explode inside of him.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it had to be messy. Yeah.
His farewell message kind of makes me raise an eyebrow a little bit, because he writes these all down on a pad and with a pen, because he can't find the words. I am a man of science. There is no God. There is no heaven. There is no hell. And I'm like, Reed, you have been to both of those places and you have met God.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Not Matt Fraction.
Yeah, but it's like, it depends on whether or not you believe in like a God or like a...
Reed has met God.
Like
watched as Jack Kirby, God, took a pencil and erased the permanent scars from his face and drew Ben back to life as the Thing.
Yeah, but that's not God. That's like...
He lived in a higher realm that they accessed through Doctor Doom's machine, and he had angels with flaming swords guarding the gates to his art studio.
Yeah, but that's like...
We're making a big deal out of nothing, because it's what he says next is really important.
Yeah, that is the truth. It's like, no hell means it doesn't matter what we do, means... what we do is all that matters.
Yeah.
I really like that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and all of this is in a tie-in, and I was like, God, I'm so glad I bought this. I almost did. I kind of want to get the next... Is there another one, or is there just one?
No, it's just the one. This is it. There's just one of everything every month.
For some reason, I was thinking they were going to do two, because it was like so long, because it was like 10 issues or something.
Yeah. Next month is... there's an Avengers Assemble tie-in, which I won't get because DeConnick's not writing it. There's a one-shot, which is Ultron number one, which is about Victor from Runaways, which I will get. And there's a Wolverine and the X-Men tie-in, which is by Matt, which is not by... Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
The month after that is a second Avengers Assemble tie-in, a Fearless Defenders one, and I think maybe another Wolverine and the X-Men one, maybe? No, an Uncanny Avengers.
Is it only certain books? Like, they're not doing it for...
Yeah. That's it. There's literally... the total number of books for Age of Ultron, including the main 10-issue series, is, like, less than 20.
Huh.
Wow. So probably there's be two books for the full train?
Yeah, presumably. I mean, there's only two or three tie-in one-shots a month.
Now, the perfect way that you do the trade is you do 5 issues of the Age of Ultron... then 5 of the tie-ins, and then do the other 5 in the second book. That's awesome. How you do it.
Fantastic Four was cool, and just a quick nod to Batman Inc. number 9. It's the Requiem issue. You know, all the Batman books were doing Requiem issues for Robin, and here's the actual one by Grant Morrison, and it's the actual, I think it's the only issue where you actually get to see them burying him. You know, I think all the other issues, it's like, oh, we heard, you know, Robin died. Oh, God, that sucks. So what's going on in our regular story? You know, basically, yeah, that's what those
well,
were.
Some of them were, some of them weren't. Like I said, the two that I read that seemed to be were Batman and Robin. Like, those two books were not the sort of, by the way, Damian's dead books, so.
And he does it really well in the issue. Basically, he's fighting the dude that, you know, Batman's fighting the dude that killed him. You know, that really big super clone of Damian. And it's going like, you know, panel of him fighting, panel of them, like, you know, at the funeral, panel of him fighting him and everything. I mean, Batman's so badass, he's barefoot, and he breaks his sword with his bare foot.
That was badass.
He does what?
Yeah, it's pretty badass. And then, like, you know, like I said, Bat-Cow, and that's... You know,
no, wait, he does what with his bare feet? I didn't hear him, sorry.
Catches the sword, twists it, and then slams it with his bare foot and breaks
it. Slams the sword with his bare foot, and he breaks it in half,
Oh, my God.
Batman.
Yes.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's cool. You guys should totally pick up the trade.
Yeah, I'm getting back on getting caught up through the Morrison run. I picked up RIP yesterday, so
Do you know how much longer Batman Inc.'s gonna run? Like, is it 12 or is it
they've said 12, but you know, we haven't reached the solicits for 12, so we don't know yet. You know, they said Action Comics was only gonna be 16, it became 18.
Yeah.
Well, nine.
There's some leeway, but
it's winding down because, like, yeah.
Can't see definitely.
Much else happening, so I figured it was 12. But yeah, good book. I'd recommend it. Awesome.
Cool. All right. So I'm just gonna power on here because we don't have much to talk about. I have really nothing to recommend, to be honest. I mean, it was a light week.
Oh my God.
For me. I would have read.
Came out is like, ah, it's just okay. I'm not even bothering to recommend
it. I would have read Uncanny Avengers, and I totally missed that it was out. I thought I had it on my pull list. I guess I didn't.
Did you get Guardians of the Galaxy? Because I couldn't get it.
No, I didn't get that either.
I was going to get the first one just to take a chance that, oh, maybe this might be.
Yeah, I'm going to read it. I didn't realize that was out either.
They sold out, but I couldn't get a copy.
Well, so I would have done it digital then, but didn't remind me. I blame you, Chris Triplett. Anyway, so I don't know. I read Firestorm, and that was fun.
Is that the last issue?
No, it's getting close though. You can tell that Jurgens is like really taking it easy. It's like, here's another villain, Multiplex. He's sort of a semi-opposite of Firestorm, because you know Firestorm is two people combined into one superhero. Well, this is one supervillain that can split into many supervillains.
He's his own henchman.
He is his own henchman. And his name is Multiplex.
When you said his name was Multiplex, I was thinking maybe he had like the powers of like stores in a mall or something.
Right, like yes.
The corn dog on the stick.
No.
And there's the crappy ice cream place and pizza place or something.
No. but no, it's great because like the first part of the issue, you get Relay and Bone Crusher. Is that his name? Bone Crunch, Bone Smasher, Head Smasher.
Hey, are we talking about a comic by Dan Jurgens?
Yes, we are.
How did I figure that out with that villain's name?
Yeah, totally. Anyway, he was back, and Relay as well. I guess they figured Black Hole was kind of lame. But the last time that Skull Crusher, that's the guy's name.
Even more 90s.
The last time that Skull Crusher and Firestorm met, Firestorm turned him into a bunny suit, and this time he turned his suit into a diaper, so so that's fun.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's a thing.
Is there anything in the diaper? That would have been just disgusting.
Probably just his bits, I guess. But yeah. But anyway, I don't know. It's winding down, but it's still good Jurgens stuff. So. It's fun.
Is he showing up anywhere after Firestorm's done? Is he jumping on something next?
He kind of hung out with the Teen Titans. So.
Oh God! If he would,
I know.
Teen Titans. I would buy that book again.
I would not.
I would totally buy that book.
Would not be surprised if they jump him over to Teen Titans if they expand that title a little bit. Otherwise,
Triplett's talking about Jurgens going somewhere, not Firestorm.
Oh. I'm talking about Firestorm. Jurgens?
Yeah,
either one of those things would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Jurgens?
Jurgens jumps onto.
Nah, I imagine.
I would totally buy that book.
No, I have only speculations of where Jurgens may end up. You know, DC loves to keep him on hand for stuff, so, you know, maybe he'll take over Action.
I mean, DC like to keep a lot of folk on hand, but it didn't work that way.
Well, that's the nice thing about Jurgens, is they haven't pissed him off yet enough that he would, like, totally walk out the door, so.
You know what he should do?
He's been around DC so long.
Jurgens lived through the thing that's happening here with DC, it's exactly the same thing that happened during Bob Harris, who is currently in charge of DC, editorially, during his tenure in Marvel in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Jurgens lived through that once already.
Yeah, and that's what surprises me about how long Jurgens has been around with it, because it's like, how are you putting up with this, dude? You dealt with this nonsense, you know, back when he was working on Spider-Man and stuff. Then how is, you know, I guess he's...
Yeah, I was about to say he needs to come back to Marvel. And
We should interview Jurgens again and just be like, so tell us, Dan, how much longer do you think you're going to be able to put up with the BS at DC?
How much longer you got in you?
I mean, like, we know that you have got to be full to the brim of bullshit. So,
hey,
like...
Dan, what can you fix with DC? Because there's a lot broken.
Like, he's not even at a fix-it stage. It's like paycheck,
well,
man.
Putting me on everything, so they seem to think I have all the answers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and well, I mean, at this point, it's like it's a paycheck, man. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, even if he's jumping a lot of books, he's getting a paycheck. And like you said, like this is a book where it's just kind of like, yeah, do whatever you want, Dan. He's like, okay, multiplex, woohoo.
That's old.
Seriously, dude. Dan Jurgens on Teen Titans, they might get me back with that.
That would be awesome, but that's totally not the direction that's going. I mean, as far as I know.
Booster Gold would show up every once in a while and teach him a lesson.
They just need to give him Booster Gold back, man. They just need to start Booster. Aren't
well,
there...
Maybe they'll springboard Booster back off of the back of this All-Star Western appearance.
Aren't they short a 52 book?
I don't even know.
I think they're short a book, last I heard. So, anyway, I don't know. So, otherwise...
Count many books, man. Many series.
I read Scarlet Spider 2, but it was just kind of like... They did a really crazy... Not crazy, but the kind of cray-cray thing last time. And then they just sort of magically undid it for no discernible reason at the end of the book. And so it's just kind of like, oh, well, I guess they're not going to do that. Okay. It's a little strange. So, anyway, there you go. What you got, Chris Feely?
Okay, I'm talking about a new number one, so take a drink. I'm going to tell you about East of West.
Who? What?
Number one from Image this week. And you'll know why I picked this up when I tell you that it's by Jonathan Hickman.
Oh, well, there you go.
With art by Nick Dragotta, who you may remember was Hickman's partner for some of the post-finale FF issues.
Ah.
Yes, so it's a good team on a lovely looking book. Now, this book takes place in one of Hickman's favorite places, which is the alternate history. Or rather, it is the future of an alternate history. Now, we join things in 2067, I believe the year is in this story. 2064. In the future of a world where, during the 18th century, sorry, the 19th century, got to get my numbers right, all of the disparate Native American tribes actually allied together in order to fight back against the encroaching white man.
Mm.
And so the Civil War gave way to a war between the Native Americans and the United States, which was eventually brought to a close in the early days of the 20th century by a comet strike on North America that served as the wake-up call, just an event that marked the end of the war. And so America was divided into the... how many was it? The Seven Nations of America. United States no more. Now Seven Nations split up between Americans and Native Americans. The Union, the Confederacy, the Kingdom, and then there's like the neutral zone in the media in the middle where the combat strike happened. So that's the past of this world. And we join it in the year 2064, where in a world which is part frontier town, part sci-fi utopia robotic landscape. A stranger enters the doors of a saloon. This is a story that you've seen before, you've read before. In a saloon, somewhere out in the middle of some baked red desert, a strange man with no apparent name enters.
I hope he's got robot parts over his long coat. You know, that'd just make it perfect.
He does have a robot horse. He has a robot horse. He does not have robot parts. He is a man clad entirely in white, with two entirely white and entirely black Native American guides taking him through the wilderness. And he's here to find the man that done him wrong.
Okay.
But what if this lone rider was one of the horsemen of the apocalypse?
On a robot horse?
On a robot horse. Yes, the end times are nigh, and famine, war, and conquest are getting ready to bring the world to its end. But death is not with them, because death has a shit list, and he is going to get every single person on it.
Wow. So it's kind of like Deadlands, basically.
I don't know Deadlands.
Deadlands was an RPG game from a couple... Huh? Oh, there you go. The tabletop RPG game, but it was very similar setting in terms of... Although there was mysticism and magic in that game, but... Similar context.
This world too. The very first scene of the issue is somewhere off in the red rocky desert. An emblem on the floor of the desert glows, and from three of four emblems etched into the ground, three children emerge, and we find out in the course of the issue that these are war, famine, and conquest, and that the horsemen live cyclical lives, and that in preparation for bringing the world to its end, the horsemen have been reborn in the forms of children, but death has not been reborn with them, and that is because death has clung to his old life, because death was betrayed. In some fashion, we don't know how, we don't know what, we don't know why. There's a conspiracy involved, the government is involved in it. Death was betrayed and left to die in the desert.
Wow,
that's ironic.
Isn't it, though? Yeah, you know, we killed you. Oh, what you done was far worse.
Does death look like Clint Eastwood? Because that would just be excellent.
He doesn't really look like him, but if you do just, you're on the right track. It is the kind of man...
Yeah, Pale Rider sort of, yeah.
That's exactly the words that were about to escape my lips. I don't remember if they use the term Pale Rider in the course of the comic at all. I'm just flipping here. No, they don't at any stage. But he is white-skinned, white-haired, entirely clad in white. So
Pale Rider, but like, what's his name from Preacher?
The Stand of Killers?
Santa Killers, yeah. Like I was thinking of that too.
Kind of like that, yeah. But he's not killing with abandon or anything. Like he enters this bar, and the bartender is the hired gun who found him and brought him to wherever it was that whatever this was went down. You know, and he turns and he insults all of the Union, all of the Union soldiers who are in the bar, you know, he toasts the fall of empires, and unfortunately the soldiers take it badly, and they square off against the two Native American guides that he has with him, who are like him entirely. There's one male that's entirely white in a cloak, and there's one female that's entirely black with white war paint, and they kill everyone in the bar, you know. But the bartender realizes who he is and why he's there, and Death just wants the name of the man who hired him, you know, and he lets him live because he gives him the name. You know, he's not just killing anybody and everything with abandon, you know.
Yeah, that totally rips off Deadlands, dude. I mean, not rips off. I mean, it probably plays it riffs on it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like I'll read you this here. It's like. The history of the Weird West is identical to real world history up to July 3rd, 1863. On this date, in the fictional universe, a group of American Indians from various tribes, led by a Sioux shaman known as the Raven, perform a ritual to drive out the European settlers. The ritual created a conduit, the spiritual realm, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there's magic and stuff in this world, but it seems like the comet is serving a similar purpose. That's interesting, though. I mean, it's a good setting.
Well, Well, are the Four Horsemen involved in that one?
Well, because most of that game takes place, like most of when you play Deadlands, most of it takes place in, like, the 1880s, 1890s. So it would be, like, that setting, like, rolled forward, you know?
Okay, well, I don't know. There's a similar route, but I don't know that there's...
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying. It's like that origin is very familiar, but yeah. But that's interesting. But no, I mean, I don't mean to say it's, like, bad. It's like... Or that's any kind of unique idea. But it just reminds me a lot of Deadlands. There's, like, one person in our audience is like, yeah, Deadlands, totally!
I think so, yeah.
I think we're estimating anybody saying, yeah, Deadlands, because I don't even know if it's one, JD.
There's bound to be one. Somebody check the chat. There's bound to be one person in the chat that knows what Deadlands is.
And that's about all that's in the chat this week.
Oh, well.
Easter weekend's got the chat quiet.
Yeah. Oh, well. No, anyway, someone will listen to this show and be like, totally, I know what Deadlands is.
But I think that... it sounds like a good book, though. I mean, like...
Yeah,
I
it sounds...
concept. And, dude, Jonathan Hickman, I mean, he's got, like, the Image comic thing everywhere, doesn't he? Like, what is that, like, his fifth or sixth Image comic?
Well, I mean, he's got Manhattan Projects. There's that other one, Secret, that we talked about the first issue of that I never read anymore of because it didn't grab me. And I'm not even sure if that's still coming out, to be honest, because I know that got chronically late, and he kind of apologized for it, but basically said, yeah, this is never getting on track, so I don't know if it just comes out whenever or whatever. Manhattan Projects comes out semi-regularly. You know, I'd say we get about 3 issues every 4 months or so, you know?
Yeah.
But this again, it makes me wonder, like, how often will I see new issues of East of West? Because I mean, I only ordered the first issue. Check it out after Secret, but I'll be back for more of this. You know,
is it a monthly? Is it a mini?
Well, no, it's an ongoing notionally. Okay. Is it notionally okay. Monthly? But
yeah,
I mean, it does seem it does seem to have a finite story by design. I mean, I'm not going to spoil who the identity of the first person that. That he's gunning for is, but he finds him and he gets him by the end of the issue, you know, so he's had his first bit of revenge by the end, and it does have the plot underway. This was done for a reason, there's a conspiracy behind this, and of course, like, there's the activities of the other horsemen who are preparing for the end of the world, but they're all children, you know, and they don't have the minds of children or anything, but they're reborn in children's bodies, and then they...
So it's uber creepy, then.
Oh, goodness, yes. I mean, they're talking about all the wonderful ways they've killed people. But, I mean, war is not super happy about it. You know, I'm just saying, for 1,500 years I was war. Glorious warrior. Amazing lady parts. Now I'm stuck in the body of a little boy.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's got that Hickman flair for dialogue. You know, like, after the Indians have killed all the Union men in the bar. The Indians are called the Wolf and the Crow. After they've killed everyone in the bar and the bartender has realized who he is, you know, he says, you're, and then the Death sticks his gun in his mouth and says, don't you say my name unless you really mean to call for me. Because you call, I surely will come.
Oh, man. Oh! Okay, I've got to read this.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in the story, you don't know for sure that this character is deaf, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm reading it, I'm like, yeah, that's... To say it's about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse is doing it short shrift and not really doing it justice, because, yeah, okay, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse are in it, but that's not what it's about.
Right. You know,
it's about a pale rider with a shit list.
Yeah,
guys that he is going to kill before he shuffles on to what comes next.
Yeah, just
and
like
it just so happens that is Death himself.
Just like Pale Rider, and yeah,
so. Yeah,
interesting.
Oh yeah,
it's like an uber western.
Yeah, it is part western, part sci-fi, part biblical apocalypse.
Nice.
I have been called Abaddon, the Reaper, Fool's Bane, the Grey Walker. Now say my real name, you son of a bitch.
Ooh! Oh, I gotta read it. Yeah. Gotta have it.
If you can find it, because retailer order, Image cut off retailer order increases for it before it came out, which was a strong sign that it has sold out and will hopefully be going to second printing. So if you can find it, get it. You might have to go digital on that one or wait for a second.
Comixology?
Yeah, I might be doing digital on that because I definitely want to read it.
I will just point out that it is a 350. It's one of those vanishingly rare books at a 350 price point. And presumably it will be at normal 22-page proportions with each subsequent issue, but this first issue is 36 pages of story.
Mm. Okay.
It sounds cool, though. I really like the idea of that.
There are zero ads. There's not even the usual image house stuff in the back. It's like there's inside front cover with credits on, inside back cover with map of America as it is now, split up into the seven nations, and then all 36 pages in between that are story.
Wow. Okay.
So you're getting what you pay for off the back of the first issue, and I will definitely be back for more of that. So I may be talking about it again in the future.
Sweet.
Well, I mean, just great art from Dergata as well, I should mention too. I mean, I really enjoy his work. It's not immediately recognizable. Like, I have not read a lot of Dergata's work. I read Vengeance with him and Joe Casey, and I read, of course, the FF issues that he did. But it's not something that I would immediately look at and go, oh yeah, there's Nick Dergata. And I don't know if maybe that's just because he was playing up the Kirby influences when he was doing the FF or not. But no, it looks really good, and it's got a really nice palette of like these. It's like, you know that as soon as this figure steps into the bar, that something is up. Not just because he's pure pale white, it's because he's immaculate in a world of dusty red rock and filthy, sweaty soldiers.
Mm.
You know something's up, you know?
Yeah.
Frank Martin, I believe, does the colors, and a nod to him there for his work on that, too. Yeah, part Western, okay. Part sci-fi, part conspiracy theory, part biblical apocalypse.
Nice. The West. Okay. All right, now, explain action to us.
Yeah, okay, right. So, Action Comics from last week, not from this week, as Morrison's run comes to an end. I don't know what you want me to say here.
I don't know. Just, you seem to like we sort of skimmed over it, but and I think I get it, but I just want to make sure that we get it, and you know, you have a better knowledge of it, so it's like you can dig into some of the bits a little bit better.
Like, I remember when Action number one came out, and all these little things I didn't get. Like, I read it, I was like, oh, I get this, you know, I like this. And then you came back and you said, oh, but you know, this happened, and this happened, and this happened.
Right.
And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I love this book, and I didn't catch any of that. You know?
Well, I don't even know where to start. So Superman is still battling Vindictivix. At the end of last issue, Lex Luthor arrived swearing that nobody kills Superman but him, and that lasts about two pages, which I kind of liked, because it was like, yeah, no. But you see here, like, Lex Luthor is still, he's in prison in this. He's only remote controlling his battle armor, and you see that he's still in prison. So that really, it's another illustration of how the times are really colliding, which factors in rather importantly to the, I mean, we know that Vindictivix has been colliding timelines and attacking Superman like simultaneously across many times and pulling pieces of different times together and smashing them together. Because we saw Super Doom emerged from the portal while Lex was operating it. So obviously he's pulled Super Doom from another piece of time. I mean, essentially this issue is the, if you think of time as like, think of it like an accordion, okay? Or a slinky, right? And it's like, so at one end you've got early Socialist Crusader Superman from the start of Action Comics. And then at the other end you've got modern day Superman as he appears in the New 52. And this story is, when the accordion gets pushed in, everything meets in the middle. And then after it's over, it goes, and we're now at the other end of the accordion. This is us jumping via the medium of time colliding with itself up through the Superman of today. It's hard to know exactly what Superman we're looking at any given time in the story. I mean, that's a thing, you know. I don't know when we jump from being about the Superman we had been following through the first, say, 12, 13 issues of the comic up to now, or if it's just a case of multiple Supermans, one after the other or whatever. I mean, by the climax of this story, we are definitely dealing with a Superman who we know has faced Mrs. Pitlick already. Because we know that would happen. We know whenever we got the brilliant story a couple of issues back about Mrs. Pitlick in Vindictivix past, about how Mrs. Pitlick knew of Superman and had annoyed Superman, and it just hadn't happened for the Superman of Action Comics just yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we are at a point now where the Superman at the end of Action Comics is one who has already had that happen to him at some point in his past, you know. So Superman is fighting him anyway. He's fighting Vindictivix and the anti-Superman army, while the Legion of Superheroes has come, and Saturn Girl has used her powers to awaken Magic Mr. XXX, or Mrs. Pitlick's three-dimensional form, from the coma that he was put in after Vindictivix attacked him and left him in the coma. You know. This random thing happens wherever Fernald arrives, and Mrs. Pitlick's son, his and Mrs. Nixlingus Pintles's son, Fernald. And they just casually mention, like, he's a damaged edge of Vindictivix. What?
Yeah. What? I was like, that's okay, so there's a good point where I was like, huh?
Huh? Yeah. He's a musical therapist, you know. And then Pidlick says, oh, I taught your mother how to use her blood to escape to the second dimension. What? Yeah, what?
What?
Yeah. She hid as the in the she hid in the red in Superman's S.
What? Wow.
I mean, I was like, she was just so casually dyed. I was like, wow. But no, I love the fact that we come back to it a little later in the issue. We find out she did survive. Now, Fernald, I don't know the character's history or anything, but this character did previously exist in some Golden Age thing. I don't think he had any major role or anything, but he was a pre-existing character. And people, his name was Fernald Nixley, or Ferlin Nixley, or whatever his name is. And people noticed that right away, obviously, whenever the landlady with the surname when Nixley appeared. And but I think it was the case in the character's previous appearance. And no, it wasn't the previous appearance. But anyway, Nixley said at some point in the past of this run of Action Comics that Ferlin was her nephew, not her son. But then that comes around to where we're going later.
Okay, I think I got it, but that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm trying to make sure I'm fitting all the pieces together right. So
anyway, they've woken up. They've awoken Mrs. Pitlick from his coma anyway, and it says how do we prevent Superman's death? And you have to make sure Vindictivix gets the trick. That's how Mrs. Pitlick tells them that it has to happen. They keep on fighting, and there's a lot of fighting, and then Captain Comet brings the other what were they called? Neo Sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
From the other planets that he visited into the fight, which don't really have anything to do with anything, but I believe maybe characters from Legion or something. You know, I don't know. They are pre-existing characters, and they help turn the they keep the anti-Superman army busy while Superman gets his stuff together.
I thought those guys were just Grant Morrison saying, like, I'm just gonna do whatever the hell.
Yeah.
There's this guy that looks like, a bird, and he's got a bow and arrow, and you know.
Well, he looks like that same Ray, the guy, the Green Lantern guy.
Tomar A.
Just looks.
He's got
like
the beak. Yeah.
Not. Yeah.
So. So it looks like anyway. Superman. He looks like he's on the ropes. You know. Vindictivix is still winning. He has him in his giant hand, and he seems to link him to. He links them to. Vindictivix links Superman, it seems, to the consciousnesses of everyone on Earth, so he can feel all their fear, loneliness, and confusion all at once as he destroys the world. And Superman realizes that, you know, he has fought Vindictivix in the past. He will fight him in the future, in all of these moments in time that are now colliding. But for Vindictivix, for his five-dimensional perception of the world, this is only happening one time. He is striking once at multiple points in time all throughout. And every time, Superman has always won and beaten him. Every time before, Superman's beaten him back, and it seems to Superman as if he always comes back. But really, it's just that Vindictivix will always lose. There's no way that he can win, you know. And in last issue, or maybe it was the issue before, Vindictivix like appeared on all the screens all over the world saying, I'll let you all live if you reject Superman when he comes for your help, you know? Because I guess maybe he's seen this happen before, whatever. He can't make him say his name backwards to send him back to the fifth dimension. But if every... It's like, I read an interview with Morrison shortly after this, and he admittedly says outright, this is sheer nonsense. This is it is the fantastical fairy tale impossibility of it, where it, if you believe enough in something, that it will be. It is the Peter Pan and Tinkerbell moment. I think you'd get that.
Yeah.
I think everybody would draw that comparison. It's like, clap your hands, you know.
He says we only have to do the impossible once. So when he said that,
say our names backwards to banish the devil. Together, are you with me? And then, like, everyone in the world says their name backwards, including like all the creators that have been on the book up until now. You can see them, like Morrison himself and Morales is in there. Yeah, no, it's awesome. And I like, if you're really into it, you probably say your own name backwards at the comic while you're reading it. You know, it's that kind of thing. Now, there's two interpretations that I have of this. And one is that we see that everybody, like the Legion's there, and Ferlin says his name backwards as well. And because we've had this idea that Ferlin is a damaged edge of Vindictivix, that him saying his name backwards in turn like causes Vindictivix to be dispelled back to the fifth dimension. But the other one that I prefer more, and Superman says it here, is that 5D words are like thunder, which is this expression we heard before whenever Mrs. Nixley was telling him the story and his ears bled from the thunderous. And I like to think that everyone in the world speaking their name in five-dimensional tongue backwards was so painful to him that he had to say his name backwards to escape the agony.
I like that.
Yeah.
I had thought the first, but I like that better.
I like that. The way he says that he retreated rather than anything else. Yeah, that's. I think maybe that's it. Maybe it's both. You know, whatever. It doesn't. It's Morrison, and then you know he vacates Super Doom's body, and Super Doom is going to explode. So Superman throws it in the sun. Yeah. And this comes back to what I was saying about Super Doom before, which is that I'm still not sure if the idea is that Super Doom was the Doomsday of the New 52 timeline, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how could he not be? I mean, like, if you look at him and they even call him, Super Doomsday, don't they, at some point?
At some point, yeah, and it says here, armor, self-destruct, engage, Doomsday mode, you know? But, I mean, when I say the Doomsday of the New 52, I mean, did this happen, and is that the moment in time that Vindictivix has plucked out and is using to attack Superman again now, or is he just taking the form of a thing that nearly killed him one time before, or not? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But he throws him into the sun, and then we get back to this really great cartoonish little 2-page spread about back to Vindictivix and Mixis Pitlick. And then, like, the whole thing, everything that's happened is totally flipped on its motherfucking head.
Yeah, that's why I was like, okay, this is where it comes off the rails, right? Like,
now, I mean, first of all, when they say that Ferlin is a damaged edge of Vindictivix, I mean, we know that Mr. Triple X was Mixis Pitlick's three-dimensional form, and that Mrs. Nixley was Gispindles' two-dimensional form, and the little man was Vindictivix's three-dimensional form. So I am taking it, then, that Ferlin is Vindictivix's ruined arm, and that is why he does not know what he is, and why he is so separated from everything else that's going on. Like, he is this bit, this three-dimensional bit of him that's been broken away, and he is the ruined arm that happened whenever Vindictivix plunged the spear into the hat. And there's a sentence I didn't think... anyway, everything snaps back to the fifth dimension, and everything snaps back to that one moment when the spear plunged into the hat and the multitude attacked all the worlds all at once, and the king is dead, and Vindictivix is led away and imprisoned, and Mixis Pitlick takes the crown.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Because this is a Mixis Pitlick who has met with Superman and matched wits with him. Mixis Pitlick orchestrated all of this so that Superman would defeat his rival and he would become the king of the fifth dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bastard. You know, and it's like Vindictivix suddenly gets it all at once, you know, and is like, it was Mixis Pitlick and no one else can see it. The whole thing is a trick where he always wins in the end. I love it. It's brilliant. But then, it's like Mrs. Pitlick marries his princesses, and they become the king and queen. And then she dies in labor, and three children are born, triplets, two sons and a daughter. But the boys he sends away because they remind him too much. But he keeps the mother and names her after the mother. And so do five-dimensional life forms live in cycles.
It's the same thing, isn't it? Yeah, I mean,
it's... The idea. It's like these.
Is the king that died.
He is the king.
His own son, who is also him, and Vindictivix, who is his brother. And son returns, and Gispintlis is his daughter wife, and that's why Fernald can be both nephew and son.
Yes,
to Nyxley. And then we find out that that's how five-dimensional life works. Whenever we cut back to baby Kal-El having this little fairy tale, the fairy tale of the king thing of Bripsix being told to him by his mother moments before the destruction of Krypton.
Head exploded. Brains everywhere.
And then at the very end, Superman, as reality is just coming back together, Superman finds himself in the red of his own ass, where he meets with Mrs. Nyxley and tells him she has that one wish that she was given left, and it has to involve red. And I love this. She offers him the chance to have everything Vindictivix ever done to his life taken away. You know, you'll never know what you lost, and you'll never have what you had unless you make this wish, she says. You know, and he says, I'll stick with what I have right now. You know, his parents are dead and everything, but that's the life that he has lived, and he's not going to undo it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a red planet count, and he's changed the destiny of those people that died on Mars a few issues ago in the attack of the multitude.
But did Red Blue Superman.
I was going to say, JD's favorite thing is Red Blue Superman, and he's even drawn kind of like a 90s-ish looking Superman,
You know? Well, Red Blue Superman goes further back than that, though.
Oh, yeah, that goes way back to, like, the 50s or whatever.
Yeah.
I was thinking of, like, the red...
Thinking of, like, the electric Superman. Yeah.
When they brought that back, yeah.
Yeah, they brought that... Yeah, exactly. They brought that back. But that's what I'm saying. Like, Red Blue Superman goes way further back than that, yeah.
I don't know what the deal with it is, I have to say. I'm honestly not sure what the story behind it is, but...
Yeah, I failed to see the connection, but...
It's like very early on in the issue, like whenever the red kryptonite woman is tormenting Superman as Vindictivix pontificates at him, you know, we see famous red kryptonite transformations, like where he has a lion's head and an ant's head and things like that. Those are all real classic red kryptonite Superman transformations.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and that's what I wonder, too. It's like, you know, again, this whole thing has been sort of a trip through... You know, Superman's history, and so you know,
completely though. We get to the very end of this, and as I said at the start, the accordion has stretched out again, and we are now like that part of Superman's past is done now. We are up to the present day, you know. And I mean, it's such a wonderful final page for the story. As he falls back to Earth after, you know, throwing Doomsday to the moon, and Crypto comes and meets him, and it's just. A dog licking his face as he's on. You should see the other guy, he says to the worst. And it's like, I mean, the comic is not subtle about it, about the nature of the story, in that it says in the very first page, that same day witnessed nothing less than a new American mythology being born. And it takes that approach, you know.
Yeah.
It is that unreal people calling out for their hero and everybody winning sort of thing. But it's like this final page of Superman and Krypto. It's like, it's equal parts boy and his dog and Paul Bunyan and the Blue Ox. You know, it's equal parts.
Well, and
it's equal parts boy, man and boy, and God and icon.
Well, and this digs right into this digs into exactly what Morrison has been talking about for years when he talks about, you know, superheroes as the new gods and our new mythology and stories. So,
what's the name of his book? Was it
Super Gods?
Yeah.
Super Gods. Yeah.
So, I mean, exactly. So, you know, I like this little backup, too.
Yeah, the backup's nice as well. I mean, this one feels a little bit more tacked on than other backups because it was really obvious that last issue's backup strip, where Superman, as time reorders itself, goes back and is able to say goodbye to Pa Kent, was supposed to go along with the final story, so they probably had to whip this one out. But it is...
this one's nice, though. I do like it.
It's an entirely silent story, except for like it's a field trip. It's set... What's it? It's set in the 23rd century. It's not even Legion Future.
It's not quite Legion. It's not even quite Booster. No. It's a little bit before Booster, even.
But it's the 23rd century, where there's a school on a field trip to the Superman Museum, and all you hear, like, little sound bites from classic Superman history, you know.
Kind of quotes.
Up, pounding surf, you know.
The last son of Krypton.
I love the you've got me, who's got you.
Who's got you.
Yeah, that was a great one.
But it is about the pervasive mythology of Superman that has lasted forever. It's like the story, the main story is about the birth of this mythology. It's like it is the final. It is all of Action Comics. We've talked about it since the very end of the first arc, when it became apparent that Morrison was moving through all of Superman's history. Mm-hmm. It is like and like, what are myths if not complete stories where, you know, tales about the birth of all creation and the end of all time can coexist and still be spoken of as the myths are told, you know. Mm-hmm. All mythologies have a creation myth and a story about how the world will eventually end. And these 18 issues of Superman are the gamut of Superman. We've seen Superman at the world's end in the course of these attacks by Vindictivix as well. It's everything from birth right through to end. And then this backup strip is about the pervasiveness of this mythology and how, like our myths and like the myths we've had for hundreds and thousands of years, it will live for hundreds and thousands of years as well. And, I mean, you know, if that's not good stuff, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
It's very good stuff.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. You know, like I said, normally I'm not a big Superman fan. It's not my thing. But this was really neat. Like, this whole run has been a lot of fun. It's been really cool.
I think now that it wobbled a bit... maybe in the late single digits, early teens, we had the five parter, which led into Brainiac, which was, I think, was great altogether. We had the two parter with the anti Superman army, mm-hmm. and from there we had just the stories basically about the members of the Superman army being formed in that rather odd Captain Comet story, and then the very start of this final run with the Multitude finally arriving seemed a little underwhelming given how much we'd had the Multitude dangled under our nose. But then issues later, we found out what the deal with the Multitude was and how it was representative of such a much greater multidimensional threat. And this is the sort of issue where it all culminates. And really, frankly, it's been like the last three issues where all the pieces have slowly been falling into place.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really does casts everything that's happened into focus. And just really how everything is essential to this complete 18-issue pocket history of Superman with tales plucked from every point in time along that of creation, like any myth.
Mm-hmm.
You can really see, after a beginning that seemed quite unassuming, how this really did become... If All-Star Superman is the story about the end of the Superman myth, the Superman... at his pinnacle, facing his great labors before the end of his story. Action mm-hmm. Comics is the story about the birth of the Superman myth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that way it does make for a great sort of bookend.
Even though you would never really think that they were related or connected to each other in that way at all. Because Action Comics is so sweet and innocent and silver agey. Whereas this is absolutely everything. You know, All-Star Superman is kind of a love letter. It's tying up all of the classic Silver Age elements. It's a bit of a love letter to that era of Superman. Whereas this is Superman, warts and all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know
great.
If I can say anything else about it.
It's it's going to be interesting to see how Andy Diggle follows it up for one issue.
Whoops,
and then...
wait, no, yeah.
And then, well...
Yeah, I I mean, really, should they just, like, go back to number one? I mean, not even, do issue 19, just Action Comics number one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you want to renumber it, you know, just go back to whatever the number was before.
I will be fascinated to see what the drop-off is. I think a lot of people will pick up the next issue, and then, in fact, I need to...
They'll be like, man, that writer really just dropped off.
I don't know what happened.
Got tired of writing the book.
Yeah, that reminds me. I will be able to pick up All-Star because since I'm dropping Action, so...
I mean, I just find it very rewarding for me as a reader, as someone who, as I've said many times, just never really got Morrison before. Mm-hmm. After I had that epiphanal understanding at the very end of the second act of his Batman, and deliberately chose to pick up Action Comics on the basis that if he was doing that again, I wanted in on the ground floor. It was just an understanding of how to read a story that he wrote, and in just having to engage myself with the comic in a way that I just is not normally necessary or that I find myself having to do. It was a really different kind of reading experience for me for 18 issues. And I'm not saying that I would want every comic I would read to be like that.
No. I mean, this is an experience. It's a thought. I mean, you know, it takes a little bit of work. You know, sometimes you just like I said about my desire for Green Lantern. I just want a space cop to punch stuff with a big baseball mitt. You know, that's
sometimes
really...
that is all you want.
You know, that's... you know.
The fiend from Dimension 5 to multiversally collide time and space in an unending revenge scheme loop full of archaeotropes.
That turns out to be a complete double cross. You know, yeah.
Next pit, like, motherfucker.
This is awesome.
I know, it's like, because the whole thing had sort of, up until now, it really had been Mrs. Pitlick as a victim, you know. And I wasn't against that, but I was like, he's established that Superman will fight Mrs. Pitlick down the road. He doesn't seem very interested in doing that himself, you know. I mean, we all assumed that the little man was going to be Mrs. Pitlick.
Yeah, that's what I was
first.
Gonna say is like, maybe they were setting it up like, you know. The old Mr. Pitlick is something that, okay, this is something we're used to, so we're going to make him the good guy. The new 52 Mr. Pitlick is the little man. You know, and I thought that's where they were going with it, but did they loop it all back around and they turn it inside out and they do all this?
And first you think that he's the victim and he's the guy that you're on the side, and then you get to the end and it's like, no, bastard.
No, in fact, worse. You know,
yeah,
it's just like...
bastard, you know.
Yeah. But then pays for it in the end as well, you know, because that's just the nature of the five-dimensional being.
He loses his sons and lives in misery forevermore. Sorry, he loses his wife and lives unhappily on the throne until his own son, who is also him,
right,
himself. Well, no, actually, no, his own son, not that son, but the other son.
Right.
Who's also...
Did you go back and pull out, like, early issues... And, like,
I haven't,
that again.
But I really should.
I kind of wanted to.
Yeah, see all the pieces. Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing's a trick.
Well, this
always wins in the end. Love it.
Yeah. Because
suddenly gets it. It's like Mrs. Pitlick says, like, do it. The way you win is when you make Vindictivix realize, get the trick, and Vindictivix understands that Mrs. Pitlick has triumphed over him in every way.
Mm-hmm.
He threw him against the one guy that he could never beat.
Yeah.
Well, and that was like, it was that indication. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure when they come back and it's like, oh shit, his arm's on fire.
Yeah. Well, we knew that he had the damaged arm.
But it was still on fire.
You know, yeah.
Like he had just thrust the spear.
It's just happened, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, like time has no meaning.
Exactly. In the fifth dimension, no. Because ideally, you know, it's the way dimensions work. I mean, if you're a fifth dimensional being, then you're...
Like, yeah, like it could have been as quick, like these 18 issues could have been as quick as a thought.
It wasn't even... It is a thought.
Like, hey, I wonder if, you know...
The fifth dimension, by Morrison's own account, going back to RIP, you know, the fifth dimension is imagination.
Yeah.
So... Ha. Huh. All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Action Comics.
That's Action Comics. Great run.
About it again.
I wanted to come back to it because you had been, you know, you had been such an advocate for it, And, you know, I know that you got it better than the rest of us, you know, not that we're stupid, but it's just like you were inclined to. You know, being the last of that run, I kind of wanted to hit that beat again.
It needed a proper send-off.
Yeah, exactly. I think it needed a proper send-off on the show. So if you haven't, you need to get all the trades for it and read it because it is amazing.
Maybe they'll just be I think actually there's going to wind up being three. No, of course there are, because there are 18 issues altogether, so there's going to be three.
So
second one has been solicited at this point, I believe. So
cool. Well,
I think if anybody is like so late that they haven't read any of it, I think you can get the first issue for free off of Comixology. It's either free or it's really cheap. Like it doesn't cost much at all.
Well, most of them, almost all of them, are like what, $1 or $2 after.
I want to say like all of the original New 52 comics are now free on Comixology. Hmm. It's just like, hey, maybe you want to read Scott Snyder's Batman, but you just don't give us money to read this issue, and then boom, hey, Grant Morrison's Action Comics. Okay, boom, I want to buy the entire run.
Yeah, you need the entire run.
It's brilliant if that's how they did it, because yeah, you'll be like, yes, I have to.
So, you know? Cool. All right, so anything to look out for next week? Or?
No, I've got a very quiet one next week. Okay. So.
That's fine. So.
Well, here's another one to look out for this week, though, that I didn't have time to talk about, that I thought I'd make a quick reference towards, is you remember I always talk about those Vertigo anthologies when they come out, the $8 ones? There's like 76 pages. There's a new one of those out this week.
Oh.
Time Warp, it's called.
Okay.
Which features the first Vertigo work by Gil Simone.
Ooh.
And you got some Damon Lindelof, Jeff Lemire stuff in there as well. This one is probably it's called Time Warp because the majority of stories deal with time and time travel.
Okay.
It's probably one of the best, one of these anthologies they've done so far, because most of the stories really do hit home. I think probably the only one that didn't work for me so well was one where I figured out the twist before I'd reached the end of the first page.
Yeah. Well, damn.
But there's a great, the first story is a particularly great one. It's by Damon Lindelof with art by Jeff Lemire. It's a Rip Hunter story about how he gets stranded in prehistoric times. When a dinosaur steps on his time bubble and he's stuck there, and his narration is like, when we were kids, we would sit around in class and we would talk about the coolest way to die. Me, I didn't even have to think about it. Eaten by dinosaur. Story then about how he's trying desperately not to get eaten by dinosaurs.
Irony.
As he flees across this prehistoric landscape, like progressively older versions of himself from his future appear to offer him the help that he needs to get from place to place.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, it's a good one.
I miss Rip Hunter.
Well, you can go and read about Rip in Time Warp this week.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, that is our show. Be sure to go to the website, fanboyversus.com, and follow us on Twitter at FanboyVS. As we like to do, we live tweet during the show. You can also listen to the show live every week, 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT. And that is at tfradio.net/live. And you can join in the chat. And sometimes we have a really active chat. This week we didn't, because, hey, it was Easter, so whatever. So the people who are here, thank you so much. I think that's pretty much it. So, all right. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on the holiday. Have a great April Fool's.
And make sure to go check out the Private Eye.
And check out the Private Eye and East of West. Is that what?
East of West, yes.
East of West.
So, yeah.
All right, very good. All right, so thanks so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it will be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.